The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Guardian Football Weekly. If there's one thing that upsets me, it's managers fielding weakened teams when there's nothing to play for. Jimbo is being rested today. No one's spoken to Dave Farrar for 3 years, so it's down to me, Max Rushton, to put a marker down for next season and give the fans something to discuss over the summer. On today's pod, we look back at all the twists and turns of a sensational final day in the Premier League, including should Borough have had a penalty at Anfield and... should Borough have had a penalty at Anfield? We'll also praise Harry Kane. Wonder who Arsene Wenger will play at centre-back in the cup final. Try and put too much pressure on a new Manchester United wonder kid. Round up all the foreign, and I've got a big bet on Barry being substituted in the 26th minute of this podcast before we finally retire him because he's just not quick enough anymore. That's all to come on today's Guardian Football Weekly. Hello, Simon Burnton.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. Hello, Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
Hello, Barry Glendening.
Hello, Max. Long time no see.
Absolutely. Look, we were all hoping that there'll be some sort of early goal somewhere to make the race for the top four exciting. And Middlesbrough should have had a penalty. And that could have changed everything. Lovren would have been sent off. Liverpool would have lost. And then Arsene Wenger would have got into the top four. And we'd be praising Wenger. He'd have signed his contract on the pitch on a big A1 piece of paper.
Are you saying that Dejan Lovren shoving Patrick Bamford over and not getting sent was just a sliding doors moment?
That's what I believe.
I think maybe Liverpool would have only won 1-0 or 2-1.
Maybe you're right. But that was the only sort of potential turning point in a day where they, you know, you want Sky to have to go, oh, it's happened here and this is happening here, but basically the league table just stayed the same.
I think it's a bit harsh. Watford kept it tight for 4 minutes.
you say that Dejan Lovren getting sent off might have made things fair there. I had a similar conversation before the game at Watford where I suggested that maybe if Company just sat out the match, they started with 10 men and a big hole in their defence, that might make that game kind of equal. But then he went off for a few minutes in the first half. He had some blood on his face or something. And they scored then as well. So, yeah, maybe not.
I mean, were Watford the most on-the-beach team or Hull? I mean, it's hard to say, but it's sort of buried in the sand, it seemed.
Yeah, I mean, the Watford have, in mitigation, no defenders. I mean, their defence was comical even before they started attempting to tackle the best attacking players in the Premier League. And they had fallen out with their manager, which also doesn't help. But, yeah, I mean... Watford's last six games is suggestive of a team whose attention was perhaps...
I, in some deluded world, thought that maybe they'd pull out a performance for Mazzarri.
I thought that we might... I thought we'd probably score. I thought we might lose 5-1, 6-1. So I was mildly disappointed.
does the league lie, Ian? Or are we happy with City and Liverpool being the top four?
No, I mean, you know, it's the fairest way of doing it, isn't it? Play everyone twice, home and away. We haven't found a better way yet. No, I don't think it lies. I think Arsenal, while they have quite legitimate reasons to be a bit miffed over that penalty thing, they just weren't good enough through the spring months again. So no one to blame but themselves, really.
Arsene Wenger said all the headlines on the radio this morning saying, look, uncertainty on his future may have had an impact on his team. And when you think about it, they only really needed... two more points from somewhere to get in the Champions League. It seems blindingly obvious that, well, I kind of think if he'd said one way or the other, they'd have two more points.
Do you? Because sometimes I think it goes the other way around. Like if he'd said, hypothetically, he'd said he was going to go, sometimes, you know, you get what happened with Pellegrini at Man City last season, it can all fade off. I like the uncertainty, the tension, you know. Everyone's still playing just in case. Well, to a certain extent in Arsenal's case. That said, Arsenal, after the West Brom defeat, have actually been fairly good. Mm-hmm. Even in the Tottenham game, where Tottenham were markedly the better team, they weren't completely overrun, as you feared they might be. And in every other game, I think they've won, haven't they?
What was Koscielny doing, Barry? What's he doing?
I don't know. Maybe he had other plans for next Saturday. He wanted to go, I don't know, to the shopping centre.
That's a good. You were really crawling to the back of your brain to think of somewhere that Laurent Koscielny could be, and you came up with the shopping centre.
No, I was trying to. I was getting mixed up between the Westfield and Centre Park, so I was going to the West Park Shopping Centre, and that would have been just hideously wrong. Just briefly, before we get on to Mr. Koscielny, it's probably worth noting that the top six teams all got more points than they did last season. This time round, you know, only one of them could win the league, obviously, but it can be argued they've all improved on last season. Man United 3 more, Arsenal 4 more, Liverpool 16 more, City 12, Spurs 16, and Chelsea a mere 43 points better off than they were last season.
But do we think, apart from Chelsea and Spurs, do we think the others have improved?
Well, the numbers don't lie, Max. You just said that yourself.
It depends. It depends. You can make a counter-argument. If you look at, you know, 46 points means that you've avoided relegation normally by not very far. And 46 points gets you eighth place this year. There's just an absolute mush below the top seven. So if they've all got more points than last year, it's because they've all had more opponents handing them to them.
Damn you. So, what do you draw from that? That just eighth down are just not very good, or just significantly worse.
So,
what does that mean for
I think that
the Premier League
although Sunderland have obviously been consistently terrible all season, there's not been a total crisis team like last year, like at Aston Villa, and there's been a lot more homogeneity in that kind of what 2/3 of the league. For there to be 6 points separating 8th place and 17th, I mean, it's suggestive of a very, just of a lack of qualitative difference between a lot of teams.
I think one factor as well might be after the humiliation for the big teams of having Leicester come in and win the title, they weren't taking other teams lightly this time. There seemed to be, certainly from the start of the season at least, an intent to take everything a lot more seriously than they had done the year before, for fear of further humiliation.
And you know, you've got Southampton in eighth, so, you know, what is it, 16 points behind Everton. Southampton now haven't scored at home in 5 games. Like, that's truly atrocious for a team that is in the top half of the table.
Everyone sort of says there's always 3 league tables in the Premier League. So now we've got the top six is one table, 8th to 20th is another table, and Everton is the third league table.
Everton are in their own mini league with themselves.
Exactly. Champions at last.
I suppose Everton could, you know, they're getting a lot of money, and could push on. They've got some excellent players.
The problem for Everton this season has been the games against the other big teams in the run-in, where they had every chance to break into the European and into the Champions League places, but they fluffed their lines against all the bigger teams around them.
And they didn't really look like they were going to take anything off. When they went to White Hart Lane, it was a nothingish game.
They were terrible against Liverpool. Mm. They've got about 150 million quid to spend, possibly more if Lukaku goes, more than that if Barkley goes. Yeah, Koeman seems to have brought a certain ruthlessness that certainly wasn't there under Roberto Martinez.
Producer Ben asks, have they ever replaced Tony Hibbert?
No one ever could. I'm amazed they didn't retire.
Apart from Seamus Coleman, I guess, who's better than him.
What? What?
are we going to have a fight over the table?
I just don't understand why they didn't retire the shirt. I mean, one club man. You know, the attention that Steven Gerrard got when he left, and they were going, oh, he's the ultimate one club man. He was joining a different club. You didn't get that with Tony Hibbert.
Should in the second minute of his final game. It's quite early, isn't it, to be taken off.
Quick guard of honour.
Yeah, how do we feel about the 26th minute John Terry guard of honour?
It was just
substitution. Look, Chelsea have won the league. They can sort of do what they like, really.
But well, it's one of those debates where I'm wholeheartedly in agreement with everyone on both sides of it. You know, I think it was absolutely the most preposterous, self-aggrandizing charade I've ever seen. And then again, I think, well, what's the harm in it if that's how he wants to go out? The one thing that doesn't sit too well with me is that apparently he organised it all himself, which seems rather hubristic, to say the least.
But I don't get it. He's always saying how much he loves playing for Chelsea, and then he clocks off an hour early on like his last game. I'd want to get every minute out of that last experience, really soak it up.
I think that, and you know, it was a meaningless game. However, it was treated with contempt by both sides. You know, that if you want to at least pretend that there's some sporting purity about the Premier League, you have to take every single game seriously, every one of them, and every minute of it. And you don't stop it so that a player can, you know, have his ego massaged.
What happened to that exact? Who booted it out?
Sunderland's. Jordan Pickford booted it out.
And his distribution's quite good, so...
yeah. Well, what happened was that when the clock struck 26, apparently, Antonio Conte signalled Diego Costa and David Moyes, you know, this is the moment. They'd agreed it before the game. Costa gave Jordan Pickford the nod and he booted the ball out of play. Now, if it was any other Sunderland player, you'd have thought, oh, he was probably trying a 50-yard pass. And it just went into the back of the stand. But Pickford is the one man you can rely on to you know, distribute the ball well. And then, this circus began. And, you know, I see where Simon's coming from. I don't particularly disagree with him, but Sunderland were bottom. They were staying bottom. Chelsea were champions. They were staying champions. It didn't really affect anyone else.
It's not that I disagree with you. I agree with, like you say, I agree with everyone on both sides. I can see why they did it. What I would quite like to have seen happen, you know, I think it was the definition of unsporting conduct. And I would have liked to have seen him sent off.
Booked for time wasting, yeah. Or a straight red?
Yeah. Straight red. That's what I would have liked to have seen. The ball goes off. They start doing this pre-organised routine, this synchronised, choreographed routine. Referee gets his book out.
You'd have to send in the army to get the referee out.
I was reading Twitter this morning, some people saying, you know, there's sort of... Is there any sort of spot fixing?
Technically, it is spot fixing because a certain bookmaker has in recent weeks been advertising this service where you can tweet them and ask for odds on anything you want and they will get back to you with those odds. So if you had been in the know yesterday and been aware that this was going to happen, you could have tweeted that bookmaker, asked for odds on Chelsea getting a throw-in in the 26th minute and...
Now, I might be wrong on this, but I think someone did exactly that and got 100 to 1. But then John Terry didn't leave until the 28th minute because of how long it took. And I don't know if they're paying out or not.
Right.
Of course, they did it all in the minute that started with the number 6 that showed the number 26, which is the 27th minute. So if you were to have made that bet on him going off, on them getting a throw in the 26th minute, no payout there.
Yeah. Can we do some sort of genuine Chelsea conversation? How good was Antonio Conte this season? I know we've talked about it on the pod.
Well,
lots
of times. That's a dressing room that has eaten so many managers before him. I thought the cleverest thing he did was not changing too much when he first went in. It was giving him enough rope. And then when it started to turn, he had a mandate then. He could make his changes, bring in the back three. Had he done that from day one, he might have encountered resistance, you know, particularly from John Terry, who didn't really fit into that shape. But having given them a chance to prove themselves unworthy, he then had that mandate to make the change. But it's more than that as well. It's every minute of every game, he seems to have been on top of them, but not so far that they've started to resent him. There seems obvious team spirit in there, which hasn't been the case for a little while. It's the LMA awards tonight. I'd fully expect him to win the big one.
Does anyone predict a years of domination from Chelsea? Or do you think that's just much less likely to happen now because of the state of the top six?
You know, we're still not certain he'll be there next season, are we? He probably will, but it's not inconceivable that he might up sticks and go to Inter, who desperately want him and have made no secret of that fact. Perhaps he's just using their interest as a bargaining chip to get a higher salary at Chelsea. But, yeah, it's difficult to see him staying there. Even if he stays for another season, it's difficult to see him staying there for the long term because that just doesn't tend to happen these days. But certainly, you know, people were writing his Chelsea obituary after that horrible defeat against Arsenal. And then he switched things around and has been very impressive ever since. And he's also made the team kind of likeable again, which is quite a feat.
Chelsea have now won the league in each of the last 4 years that there's been a general election in the UK. 2005, 2010, 2015 and 2017, which is convenient because there's an election podcast that we have to trail.
Join me, Jonathan Friedland.
And me, Owen Jones, as we bring you the Guardian's Election Daily podcast every lunchtime until polling day.
We'll bring you the best commentary and analysis from around Britain as we approach what could be another seismic day in British politics.
Subscribe now on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
That was a party political broadcast by The Guardian that you just heard there. 30 wins in a season, the first team to do it in a 38-game season. Will Diego Costa be there next season? Without Costa's 20 Premier League goals this season, I like these. When you take all the goals out, I think if you took all of Lukaku's goals out, Everton would still be in their own mini league. Chelsea would have been 15 points worse off, because obviously there wouldn't have been anyone else there who might have scored some goals. But he has been crucial to them.
Yeah. But there is an awful lot of talk of him being hawked around around China by Chelsea in search of what I read as being £129 million in one newspaper yesterday. If they can get £129 million for Diego Costa, I don't think I'd blame them for selling him.
If Chelsea are more likeable this year, a lot of that is also down to Costa. You know, he can be really disagreeable at times. And you know, last season there were periods when he was, you know, stamping on people's ankles and... there's not been a lot of that from him this year. And you know, when he really is at his ugliest, Chelsea are impossible to like. Any team with him in it are impossible to truly admire.
In his defence, though, last season, yes, he was very disagreeable, but he did also rip his bib off and throw it in the air, and it almost landed on Jose Mourinho's head, which would have been the greatest moment in football ever.
Well, if it had gone on, if the bib had totally... if Jose had his hands up in the air and the bib had just totally fitted him, that would have been really nice. Ian, what did David Luiz buy for his teammates?
Well, I didn't know these things existed because they're a little bit out of my reach. But apparently, at a price of over £1 million, according to our good friends at The Telegraph, central defender Luiz commissioned a special set of 30 Centurion keys. That's Centurion with an S, which are billed as the ultimate status symbol for supercar owners for all of his teammates. The Brazilian customised his own Centurion key to feature solid 18-carat handcrafted rose gold and 198 black diamonds, and opted to synchronise it with his Mercedes AMG G-Wagon. But he saved the most special thank you for billionaire Abramovich, as if he needed it, whose key is described as being forged from a 4.9 billion-year-old meteorite, which makes it older than planet Earth.
So I said to you, imagine if it had only been a 2 billion-year-old meteorite, how embarrassing that would be.
Well, just, why? Why?
If you had it, well, you wouldn't be able to...
Just make something. That always shows a bit more thought.
Well, it would also make the other keys you have, you know, it wouldn't really fit on your set. No, next to your Boris bike key.
You wear it around your wrist. It's a bracelet.
Oh, is it?
Mm.
Oh, I see. What will you be buying Jimbo, Barry? When the final show on June the 5th with...
when he's pint.
Will it be in sort of encrusted in a diamond glass or a meteorite glass?
No, just in a whatever... The glass of Jimbo's choosing, or the barman's choosing, sorry, not Jimbo's.
Oh, we're going to have a break now, and then we'll be back and chat a little bit about Harry Kane.
Why are you in such a hurry here, Max? What's going on?
We don't usually plough through at this rate of knots.
Well, we're going to record for an hour.
It's almost like you have somewhere to be.
I've got a charity golf day. I'm already in shorts. I'm not in my golf shoes. But I was asked to play in
charity golf
television's Ed Chamberlain's charity golf day before I was asked to do this podcast.
Right.
So I'd already agreed, but I very much enjoy doing this podcast mainly for the abuse that I get about charity golf days below the line. And so I thought, well, it'd be good to do that.
So who will you be going around with today?
I don't know.
Tony McCoy, top jockey.
Jimmy Tarbuck.
Kenny possibly.
Trevor Nelson playing?
Sometimes, quite often, you know, they have a Z-lister with each three ball. So you pay for the three ball and then you get a famous person. And it's normally quite sad as I'm sort of stood on the 8 tee introducing myself to people. literally no idea, as Jasper Carrot walks past them and they all look slightly disappointed that they're stuck with me.
I've always wondered, how do these celebrity golf days actually, where does the money, how is the money raised?
By the people paying to play.
Oh, so the actual proletariat are allowed to join you McCoy and Tarby and Lynchy.
The riffraff.
Ah, I didn't realize. I thought it was just a load of rich celebs slapping each other on the back, playing a round of golf and then throwing a tenner in the pot at the end of the day.
No, it's all for a very good cause, Barry.
Well, I don't doubt that because Chamberlain is an absolute gentleman.
He is a gentleman. So that's where I have to be. Thanks for your question, unprompted.
That's okay. Just off the top of my head.
Spurs, I was taking notes on the highlights. And normally you have a bit of time to sort of write different things about the game, but I was just basically doing a vidi printer for myself. It was a ludicrous game, that Hull, wasn't it?
And I guess, once the title was lost, people were interested in what would happen to Spurs after that. Last year, they kind of fell apart a little bit. On the final day of the season, they got tonked by Newcastle. And just the final week of the season has been astonishing for Tottenham. Two away games. You know, next year, they got 38 away games. So it's good that they're sorting out their away form. Two away games, idiotic number of goals. Super smashing.
He scored 8 goals this week, Harry Kane, which is sort of more than a quarter of his goals this season, but 29 goals in 30 starts. And actually, he's scored, you know, he's had 3 very good seasons now. And in all of them,
he won't last. 3-season wonder. They'll dry up next season.
He's the next Marcus Stewart, isn't he? But in certainly in 2 of those seasons, maybe all of them, he's not played every game.
Well, he missed 3 months this season, didn't he? And still won another Golden Boot. And what did you say, 37?
29 goals in 30
29
starts.
Yeah, it's remarkable. He's brilliant.
And how good is he? Shearer, Lineker and Wright were comparing him favourably to Benzema on Match of the Day.
Yeah, I think it sounds silly with all the goals he gets, but I think his real value is what he does for everyone else around him. That he brings so many other people into play, that he can do so many different things, holding the ball up. He's an intelligent passer of the ball as well. I mean, he's a multiplier on everyone around him. But I think
he also doesn't bring some of the sort of extracurricular baggage that Benzema does. He's, you know, he's just thoroughly well-behaved, responsible young man.
Zigzag says, why do Spurs get asked if they can keep their best players but not Arsenal or United, who finished outside the top 4? Money, I presume.
Yeah, a lot of the Manchester United players are on over £100,000 a week, as far as we're led to believe. Tottenham's wage structure tops out at £70,000 a week. So that'll be why.
So we think Walker will... It's almost like Pochettino said, cheers, Kyle, you're done now, isn't it? I mean, I tend to think Trippier is pretty much as good as him.
Trippier has always had really good delivery. He takes good set pieces, his crossing is good, he's diligent. He lacks the pace that Walker had. Mm-hmm. You know, that's Walker's outstanding feature. But, I mean, he's always been too good to be sitting on a bench, I think. And he's shown repeatedly over several seasons that he's very capable of occupying the first team right back berth at Tottenham.
I think there's a fundamental disagreement between Pochettino and Walker as to how many games Walker can play on the bounce as well. Ultimately, when you play like Tottenham play, you've got to be 100% sold on that. You've got to be 100% into it. If there's any kind of disagreement or lack of effort, then everything's going to fall apart. So if he doesn't want to be there, and you can't blame him. If Man City are offering £175,000 a week or whatever, you can't blame him for wanting to make the best of himself financially. And I think Tottenham, you know, that won't ideally want to lose him, but I think they could sustain his departure.
Should Spurs fans be worried that there'll be a sort of domino effect, though? One goes and then...
Earlier in the season, Harry Kane, who seems to sort of speak for the dressing room as much as anyone can in these circumstances, was saying you'd have to be an idiot to leave this football team now. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. It looks like a really good unit. They're all growing up together. 2 good seasons on the bounce now. I know there'll be Arsenal fans who'll scoff at that, but Tottenham have been in 2 title challenges in 2 years. I mean, that's, you go back 5-10 years and suggest that to someone, they think you're mad. Hopefully they'll hold it together.
The youngest team in the Premier League. on average age, 25.
And look at the steps they've taken this season. After the Chelsea game last season and Leicester won the title, Tottenham went to pieces, got battered by Newcastle on the last day. Look at the way they responded this season, hitting seven against Hull. So I think, you know, they're maturing.
There's a bit of a debate about whether they should be in for Ross Barkley and or Gylfi Sigurdsson. Who would you take?
Sigurdsson.
I would take Sigurdsson, but would have reservations that he's already been there and it didn't quite work out for him. I think Ross Barkley is a decent player. I'm not sure what he would bring to the Tottenham party, though, that they don't have already.
I think with Sigurdsson, when he was there before, they never really used him properly. They sort of had him as a utility attacking midfielder on the left or on the right, and he never got a chance to just sit in one position. And I'm not sure that he'd get it this time if they keep Eriksen, they keep Dele Alli. But if you had him there as your kind of backup number 10, I don't think that would necessarily be a bad thing. And I like Ross Barkley, but Sigurdsson's going to be, what, £20 million? Barkley's going to be £50 million? I'll go Sigurdsson.
Here's a stat. Because of their opening day victory against Leicester City, Hull spent one more day on top of the Premier League than Tottenham did in 2016-17. One of eight teams, I think, that have been top of the league and got relegated. That's a nice stat for you, Hull. Manchester United, remember the name Josh Harrop. Can we build him up, please, into the, you know, the next George Best or whoever you want to compare him to? He looked quite good, didn't he?
Yeah, I didn't see the full game, but I saw the goal. It was particularly well taken. Lovely quick feet. And I particularly loved the way he was celebrating before he went in, because it was genuinely a shot you know is going in when it leaves your foot. He was already off and arms outstretched and away. And it was nice to see. Didn't think we'd see many youngsters breaking into the team at Manchester United. But if you're going to toss off the last game of the season, it's a perfect opportunity.
In many ways, it was sort of more exciting than a lot of Manchester United games this season, wasn't it? Would anybody?
Did you see what happened afterwards? Manchester United's players were doing their lap of appreciation, as it's called.
And then Jose
went in to do a press conference. There was only, I think, two journalists sitting there. So Jose sat down with his PR flunky and she said, any questions? And the two guys just sat there mute. Couldn't muster a single question between them. And Jose just said, okay, great, see you. And off he went.
It looked as if they really enjoyed it as well, the PR person and Jose, as they walked out and they would have a nice little chuckle around the back.
I just find it weird that...
Jose's been a bit weird for the whole season, really, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been a bit strange. And perfectly entitled to do it. You're obliged to go and talk to the press. No one's ever set a time to make sure everybody's there. So I don't think he's done anything wrong. I just would have thought when you've had a game where you've picked some kids and they've done really well, you might want to go and talk about that. It'd be a nice way of lifting the mood. But, you know, he is his own man.
Simon, are you excited about the Europa League final?
I guess so. As excited as I can be about Manchester United games.
Which is not very...
Well, I mean, recent history has taught me not to overindulge myself in that. But yeah, I'm up for it.
I 100% guarantee Manchester United win that game.
100%?
100%. It's Jose Mourinho in a final. They win. It won't be interesting, but they'll win.
The curse of McIntosh, possibly. Man United scored fewer goals than Bournemouth this season. Barry, you were interesting on the radio about Romero. I don't know if you've made that point on the pod before.
Was I?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Just the fact that basically...
I know what you're getting at. There has been a lot of people fretting about the fact that, you know, wondering will he be ready for the Europa League final, and is it a gamble that Jose has come out and said that this Argentinian international goalkeeper with almost 100 caps to his name will be playing. And I'm not sure what people's concerns are, because, you know, he is a very good goalkeeper. And, like I say, has almost, I think, over 80 caps for Argentina. He'll do fine.
Ian gives Ajax a 0% chance of victory. Do you?
And I've just absolutely jinxed Sergio Romero, so it will be interesting. So I'm guessing Ajax will lose 2-1 and Romero will throw one in by accident.
Taibbi-like performance.
Does anyone have anything exciting to say about anything else that happened in the Premier League? I thought Fagulli's goal was lovely for West Ham, and it gave me a chance to say Burnley got one in the Fagulli's. But apart from that, I don't know if there was anything else that fascinated anybody yesterday.
I wanted a season-ending whinge about set pieces.
Okay.
Just, it seems that particularly corners are the most basic test of a manager's kind of coaching abilities. You know, you need to place the right players in the right places and tell them what their job is, and it needs to be the right job. And then you don't concede so many goals. And West Brom are the perfect example of this. I
mean, but their stats are miles above everyone else's, aren't they?
So they, goals conceded from corners. They've conceded 4 goals from corners this year. And the teams that generally have conceded fewest are the top teams in the league. You know, Tottenham, Chelsea, Manchester United, Arsenal have conceded 2 and 3. But it's basically nigh and impossible to score from a corner against West Brom. And you compare that with, say, Marco Silva, right? He is a manager whose stock has been rising these last few months. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that he is totally incompetent from corners. You know, he is unable to coach a team to something anywhere near acceptability from corner kicks. And I don't understand why a manager who's incapable of doing that, of meeting the most basic challenge of a coach's coaching ability.
Is there anything more tactical in defending a corner than just everyone get a man and stick with him? As in, that's what I would say to my Saturday team. Mm. None of us are professionals and we don't concede that many goals. Obviously, the delivery is not quite as whipped in and the players we're playing against, but it's level.
If you go back to the famous game, Swansea 5, Crystal Palace 4?
Yep.
And I think nearly every single goal came from a corner, and the defending was just...
certainly a set piece.
Comically yeah. inept. And then, so Alan Pardew gets his marching orders a month later from Palace. Allardyce comes in, and before too long, it takes him a few games to instill his philosophy such as it is, but you know, they're suddenly defensively sound and not conceding goals again. It can't be that difficult to coach a team to defend corners.
But as Simon makes the point, why doesn't everybody just do that?
I don't know.
It is not magic. It is not like, you know, there are aspects of preparing a professional team to compete at the highest level which are beyond the ken of most spectators, journalists, quite a lot of players, I imagine. But corner kicks is not one of them. And if, like, you look at, like, Hull's game at Crystal Palace recently, where Benteke and Dan were getting free runs at every corner. You look at the way Vincent Kompany headed in against Watford, who have been another, you know, probably the worst culprit of all. They've 7.9% of all corners they've conceded have resulted in goals. And the next worst is 5.7%. And then you've got West Brom, who concede from 1.9% of their corners. You know, this isn't rocket science. And if a manager cannot do that, then they cannot be trusted to do anything. That's the point.
Would you like Pulis at Watford?
So I'm really critical of Pulis in many ways. I do think he is extremely genial. I watch him in press conferences, and if I had to choose a Premier League manager to go to the pub with, he'd be up there. If I had to choose a Premier League manager whose team I wanted to watch every game all season, he wouldn't be so high.
Can anybody come up with a stout argument for zonal marking while we're on the case of defending set pieces? Arsenal at West Brom couldn't do it. I don't understand why anybody would ever do that.
Well, in fairness, if you do zonal marking properly, you shouldn't concede many. I can't remember who it was on TV recently who was saying, great thing about man-to-man marking is that when someone scores, you know exactly who to blame. It's like, well, yeah, but they've scored. I think the greater way would be not to let them score. A zonal, when it's done properly, does work. It's a lot more complicated.
But with zonal marking, this is what I've never particularly understood about it. Do the attacking players not get like a good run on the ball so that they have? It's easier for them to attack it than for you to attack it?
The problem with zonal marking is physics. It's as simple as physics.
But you're still...
You can't really fight against that. So if one person is jumping from a standing start and the other person is jumping from a running start, then person B will jump higher.
There were some parts of physics I didn't find simple.
but I understand that a bit. But it's doing it properly. If you know where the ball's going to go and it's going to go into your zone, then you run and you get the jump. You're seeing the same ball at the same time. It's just correctly assessing where it's going to go, whether it's in your zone and how to go for it. What usually happens is that everyone stands very still in their zones and doesn't jump and the ball goes in. Everyone goes, ah, well, that's zonal marking at fault. It's like, well, no, it's the defenders at fault not doing it properly. For all of that, if I was a manager, I'd probably be inclined to go more with man-to-man marking just because it's easier to drill it into people's heads.
What I've always wanted to see is basically the attacking team lining their players up at the edge of the area to get around, and the defending team lining their players up
in the goal
on the touchline.
Yeah,
and then everyone running into each other. That's what I wanted to see.
I had a football coach who once made us do a training session where we were in a circle, so a squad of about 18, and then two of us were numbered one, two were numbered two, two, three, etc. The ball was in the middle of the circle, right? He would shout a name and you'd have to run and try and get the ball. It was like, it was basically getting your whole squad to 2 foot each other.
Demolition derby.
It was just disastrous. Let's finish this part with a couple of stats. Robert Snodgrass, despite his last appearance for Hull being on January the 14th, he still ended up as Hull City's top goal scorer with seven and created more goal scoring chances than any other Tigers player. And Barry, Sunderland spent 189 days bottom of the Premier League in this season, with 110 of those coming in successive days from February the 1st to the end of the season. They spent 67% of the season in last place. They've now finished bottom of the Premier League on three occasions, a joint record with Nottingham Forest. How do you feel?
Relieved. It's over. It's finally over.
I think Moyes will go this week.
Do you?
Yeah.
Based on?
Just got a feeling that the some of the stuff coming out about how he seems to be laying down instructions for the Sunderland board, you've got to back me, you've got to give me this much money. That feels like someone who's going, you know what, I don't really care too much if I get sacked here.
I think you might be right. He stayed in London after the Chelsea game. He's supposed to be having talks with the owner, Ellis Short, today, Monday, I think, or tomorrow.
Is the only caveat to that, you know, the stock of David Moyes
has plummeted
down and down and down. And if he leaves now, well,
I just think he's in a position...
Or do you think he'd be worse off if he stays?
Well, I think he's in a position now where he... And this is all just hypothetical, but I think he's going to go loggerheads with Ellis Short, where the only logical outcome is to get some kind of settlement and then he can walk away. I don't think that he's ever really been very happy at Sunderland. I don't think he particularly wants to be there. I did an event with the London Sunderland Supporters Club on Friday, their 50th anniversary, and they were all lovely. And the support for Moyes there is... barely even 10% of them would like to see him manage them in the Championship. I think it would probably suit everybody at this stage. But I might be wrong, but I've just got a feeling.
I also don't think he thinks his stock has fallen as far as it has.
While we're on the subject, you're talking about Ellis Short and owners. Kroenke was getting a lot of abuse at the Emirates, going back to Arsenal.
Sorry, we never actually did get around to discussing what was Koscielny doing.
We've
gone on a 40-minute tangent.
Anyway, that ownership thing, can we see that that's not going to be... He's not going to sell to Usmanov, is he?
I don't think they want to sell to Usmanov. I think they want to keep the club. I think they're in a position where that club makes... £3.5 million in matchday revenue every single home game, plus the TV revenues in what has thus far been an expanding market. I don't think they've got any intention of selling.
Welcome back to part three. Barry, you seemed slightly surprised that we were going to do a Fit Bar Corner. It's not a very long one. It's just to, you know, Celtic finishing the season undefeated. We had a tweet, actually, which was asking, you know, where would the invincible Celtic team finish in the Premier League in a hypothetical world?
I think we did this before, and I think I said they'd get relegated, and I think a lot of people got very angry with me. Okay. So I'm going to not answer that question this time around.
It's
a weird hypothetical question, because if the Celtic Invincibles were in the Premier League, I think they might stay up. But they'd also have a lot of Premier League money that they don't get at the moment, with which to buy better players than some of the ones they have.
They do have
some excellent players.
Could they challenge Everton in that?
I don't think Everton only.
I was just going to say, I would see them about there.
Would you?
Because they're a very... I mean, the performance against Manchester City was absolutely fantastic. When you look at players who've done well in Scotland, quite a few of them have actually done well in England. Virgil van Dijk's a £50 million defender now. Fraser Forster's in the England squad now. Wanyama, of course, yeah. They're a very good attacking side. They seem to have a good spirit, lots of young players. I think that particular team, particularly in this year's Premier League, where eighth place got 46 points, I don't think there's any reason why they wouldn't challenge Everton. And I think, as Barry says, after two or three seasons when the revenues go through the roof, that would be quite interesting. I think if you'd asked me this about 2 years ago, I might not have agreed so much, but this Celtic team is very good.
Any more Scotland, Barry?
Inverness got relegated from the Scottish Premier League, and Hamilton are in a playoff.
Thank you, Barry. Real Madrid won their first La Liga title for 5 years. Juve wrapped up Serie A. They should probably play a match to see who's the best at some point. Now, on Thursday, you talked about France and Ligue 2. The final day on Friday night, top six were separated by 3 points. Strasbourg finished on top with a 2-1 win over Bourg-en-Bresse. Fourth promotion in 6 years for them, who were put in liquidation in 2011 and put into the fifth tier. Troyes, if that's how you pronounce it, Troyes, finished third, coming from 2 goals down to beat Sochaux. And Lens were all set to finish second, but they were edged out by Amiens, who got a 96th-minute winner at Reims. That's what happened there. Shall we go to Wembley? Bradford 0, Millwall 1. Steve Morrison, whom I'm a big fan of. Because he's a very good footballer at that level, and B, I like anyone with grey hair because I have quite a lot of it, but there aren't enough footballers short of him and Ravinelli. I'm running dry. Really.
Jeremy Toulalon. Oh. Very grey hair.
Okay.
Clint Hill.
Yes.
Clint Hill did. Yes. He was.
He is in his
66.
Late 50s now.
well done to Millwall.
It wasn't a very good game.
No, Bradford were the better side, certainly in the first half, I thought.
But Millwall were probably consider themselves lucky.
Everything's being made of Millwall fans running onto the pitch at Wembley, and then Steve Morrison being interviewed as it was happening and saying this is ruining it, which I guess is a... do you agree that ruined it? I think we all agree...
Well, ruined it for him.
Yeah. So. But going up to Stuart McCall and the Bradford players is completely ridiculous. I can't remember it happening at Wembley for a long time.
Well, a friend of mine was saying yesterday, to invade the pitch at Wembley, it's quite an odyssey, you know. It's not easily done.
Do they still have those kind of sort of string, sort of five, sort of like a sort of stringy cattle grid, I seem to remember.
Yeah, he was explaining to me how difficult it would be to invade the pitch at Wembley, because I've only ever been there high up, so, you know, I don't know how you'd go about it. But he said it is quite a complicated endeavour to embark on, and for so many of them to have done it, you know, it's quite an achievement because it takes a lot of effort. I don't think anyone's ever done it before, have they, at Wembley? And it always seems to be Millwall.
I think some Scotland fans did once.
at New Wembley.
Right.
it always seems to be Millwall fans who do this thing. But, there wasn't any violence. There was a lot of goading. I mean, I remember I was at the Den last year for their match against semi-final playoff first leg against Bradford, which Millwall won. And there's a lot of posturing at the end of the game, and the police horses came on and all that. But no violence of any note. So, you know, they probably shouldn't have done it, but I don't see that it's that massive a deal.
Do you think a bigger deal is made because it's Millwall?
It would only happen
because it was Millwall?
I think it's a bit of both there, yeah.
What they need is some kind of draining travelator, like running around the pitch, you know, like on Gladiators, just about 6 foot of reversing travelator, so that if you can get over the fence and if you can get across a few of the stewards, you've still got that 6 foot to do. That's when your lungs are burning.
Through the barbed wire.
Yeah. And then by that point, if you're on the pitch, it should be like, well, fair play.
The stewards with pugil sticks.
Yeah.
I mean, the stewards weren't there. Well, they just didn't seem to be
fair.
Well, stewards are stewards, aren't they? I mean, are you going to get a crack team of stewards? They'd be commandos, wouldn't they? I've never seen an amazing steward.
If you're on £8 an hour wearing a bright orange tabard and a load of Millwall fans are running at you, I mean, I'd probably look the other way. I'd be like, oh, phone's gone off. Sorry.
I think you're probably right. But look, well done, Tim Millwall. Good for you, getting promoted. Also at Wembley, on Sunday, there were two games. South Shields beat Cleethorpes. What happened in the Macclesfield-York game?
It was 2-2 last I heard.
3-2.
It's still going. There's a lot of injury time there.
Yeah, I stopped paying attention.
3-2 to York City. It's a nice day out for them, isn't it? If non-league fans could get patronised anymore by us. But look, good for nice for Julio Arca. There was a really nice interview with him in The Guardian on Saturday, I think it was, who plays for South Shields. I don't know if he did anything in that game, but well done to the South Shields. And well done to York, who just scored a late winner at 10:57 on Monday morning. Peter says, please ask Simon who he'd prefer in the Watford dugout next year. Would be nice to have long-term thinking behind any decision.
I mean, I've got no idea. I expect to be blindsided by an unexpected choice. I don't think that many of those, of those that have been repeatedly put forward, of those on the bookies' kind of top five, I think that Marco Silva is the only one who's being considered, and I would be surprised and disappointed were he to get the job.
I think, given Watford's habit of picking up managers who were quite good in Europe about 5 to 7 years ago, I'm going Pellegrini. That's okay. My bet.
How do you feel about that? RG Toddy says, what was more embarrassing, John Terry wearing full kit, shin pads included, to lift the Champions League trophy, or yesterday's 26-minute stunt?
I think the full kit. Full kit was a step above, yeah. Although,
what was there not though a UEFA diktat which said that's how players had to be attired when he
picked
up that
trophy?
Do you
think a ref checked the shin pads
and the studs?
You get a ref checking studs. No, I mean, I guess they have to do that at that level. It'd be nice if they did that in front of the fans. I think John says if Moyes leaves Sunderland, who would Barry like to see appointed? To give them a chance to bounce back. Can Sunderland even bounce back?
I would like to see Antonio Conte appointed.
I would go for Nigel Clough.
Okay.
Yeah. Miracles at Burton. Got a very sensible head on his shoulders. Might stabilise the club.
I'm not sure anyone can stabilise that club. It's such a basket-case, badly run club. I'm slightly concerned that any manager they'd do get in the event of Moyes departing will be one of those guys who can't get a job anywhere else and is so desperate he will take that gig. It is a big club, but it's...
Like, then.
Yeah.
Peter says, has Ian seen the Football Manager-related Macintosh Out banners from around the world? Does he feel under pressure? Hashtag squeaky bum time.
Yeah. That was fun. The good people of Shanghai with a Macintosh Out banner.
Is that you?
Am I the Macintosh?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Why do they want you out?
I haven't been doing a very good job of managing Arsenal on Football Manager. They say I won 8 on the bounce and I'm 3rd in the table. I don't think it's that shabby.
And are you going to announce if you're leaving or not, or just keep everyone hanging for a while?
I haven't decided yet.
Right, well, that'll do for us, won't it? Exciting news. Jimbo's not here on Thursday. I'm not here on Thursday. Ian McIntosh will be hosting Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Barry, your thoughts?
I'm insulted and considering whether or not I will actually turn up for what promises to be a amateurish festival of crap.
Have fun, Ian.
The Guardian.